again for joining. And as you'll notice, I am not William Satariano, as it says in the book, but I'm Lynn Shull again, and I work at ASTO and have been part of the team working on an initiative around identifying policy and systems level interventions to support caregivers, and specifically received funding from CDC on identifying these interventions and presenting them to the community guide for preventive services. So they have a pretty rigorous evaluation and research protocol that they ask folks to utilize in doing that. So this project or this report or discussion is sort of around the challenges of that, honestly. This is an evolving initiative at ASTO, and so we'll share some of what we've found so far, as well as some of the challenges that we faced in implementing this project. And again, my name is Lynn Shull, and no relationships to disclose. And as you can tell from the first slide, this is a team effort. We have staff at ASTO who have been working on the systematic review, as well as researchers at University of California, Berkeley, and University of Washington. So certainly need to thank them virtually for their efforts in this as well. And so again, a little bit more about the objectives of this project. This initiative were to consider caregiver interventions from a public health perspective, to outline an ongoing project to review and evaluate the scientific literature on public health interventions, and to identify promising new directions for caregiver interventions that are innovative and new. And then the review is based on the assumption that the best studies in this area will serve as the evidence base for an enhanced set of policy and systems level interventions to support people providing care for older adults, and also designed to identify the best and most promising interventions to reduce health risks and enhance the well-being of caregivers. And so I think folks are very aware of how important caregiving is as an issue in the United States and globally as well, but there are a total of 43 million caregivers providing unpaid care to an adult family member or friend over age 50. And as we know, they provide a critically important service to older adults who have physical and cognitive limitations, and they are also at elevated risk for a variety of health conditions, especially to those who are providing care for family members or friends with dementia. And just to clarify, this review was focused on caregivers of those with Alzheimer's and dementia. And as we all know, there are a variety of programs to reduce the negative effects of caregiving. Some examples here are respite care, skills training, and other programs to result in the reduction of stress and depression. And most of the programs to date, or at least those that have been rigorously evaluated, focus on the individual caregiver and one-on-one strategies, which is one of the things we found in our research. However, there is a growing interest in developing and evaluating caregiver interventions in a public health context and evaluating those within the public health context. And a couple reasons for this, or one of the reasons for this, could be due to Dr. Frieden's health impact pyramid, and just wanting, the tip of the pyramid on counseling and education and clinical interventions continue to be incredibly important. Certainly also want to, as public health professionals working across sectors and within public health agencies and more broadly, want to change the context to make individuals' default decision healthy. So in the context of caregivers, how can we make their lives easier, honestly, so that they are not at such high risk for depression and other conditions that can affect them. So a public health approach to caregiving has the following characteristics, and this is based on a number of expert panels that we had with academic and public health experts in the field, as well as the initial literature review, but to focus on the full community of caregivers, so assumes the demographic, geographic, and socioeconomic diversity of caregivers, so certainly not a one-size-fits-all model. Also to focus on the health practices and health outcomes, which assumes the value of prevention. So how do we address depression among caregivers before it happens, to really prevent that from happening in the first place? And examines to what extent caregiver interventions, even those designed to reach single individuals, can be disseminated broadly through aging and social service agencies, for example, and even more broadly. And so a few more about the objectives: to review and evaluate the quality of research supporting two types of caregiver interventions. And this is sort of where we ended up. We did a scoping review looking at the wide range of interventions. And again, like I said, a lot of the more individual level interventions, there was a lot of evidence on the effectiveness of those for individual populations. And so our challenge really was how to then broaden that into the more public health context and what makes the most sense to focus on, particularly within the framework of the community guides requirements for something that has enough evidence to be studied. So moving forward, we're focusing on the provision of respite care and the promotion of walking, exercise, and physical activity as it relates to larger populations, as well as sort of some of the technological pieces that could broaden the impact of those interventions. Through the original scoping review and looking at what we think of as policy level and public health interventions, focused on the CARE Act as well as workplace policies to support caregivers, and we are continuing to explore that as part of another piece that we're doing. But unfortunately, there just isn't the evidence out there that meets the community guide's level of rigor for this type of thing. So certainly not saying that those policies are good or bad. It just really speaks to the level of research that needs to be conducted around such policies so that we can include them in future reviews. And so respite care, like I said, is one of the areas we'll be focusing on. And it is defined as a temporary break from the typical care routine. It can be provided in the home by a paid companion or health aide, or in the community, such as an adult day program. And then physical activity can be a range of activities. And so some of the preliminary observations and opportunities that I've spoken to a few of these, but just sort of to summarize, the promising interventions have not been assessed in diverse populations of caregivers, and again, this is more around the public health. We know that a lot of the more individual level interventions have been assessed in diverse populations or with different demographic groups. But for the more public health systems level interventions, that is an area to be explored. Also in the literature found some interventions that were rigorously studied, but then had trouble finding follow-up studies or information on how that was implemented in the field. So sort of the remaining on the shelf, it seemed to show a great amount of promise based on the research and sort of the control studies done on the intervention, but then what happens once it's in the field. So I think this points to an opportunity certainly around public health partnering with academic partners and healthy aging network partners to, again, really gather the evidence and help with implementing some of these more research-based interventions to ensure that they work for the populations that they are hoping to support. Also incorporating new technologies in the provision of care for caregivers. So one of those, this fits well into the respite care, we're looking at that in particular. So the role of Skype or mobile apps or things like that that can help support caregivers when they need a break. And also establish an evidence base for the development of caregiver interventions in small to medium-sized organizations, for example, private businesses. So again, we are continuing to explore sort of a sub-project, the policies in workplaces to support caregivers. And so future opportunity certainly would be for organizations to really study the effects of those policies. We know that funding for evaluation can be difficult, especially if the mission of the organization is not necessarily around evaluation, but it's a great opportunity to really measure the effects of those and be able to report on that. And then also an opportunity is to develop and evaluate caregiver interventions that provide more than one service. So walking clubs for caregivers as a respite option, as opposed to just focusing on respite, and then I think some of the feedback has been sort of, okay, have a break now. How do I use that to its fullest capacity? So encouraging caregivers during that respite time to take time for themselves, certainly, but then also incorporate some healthy activities as well as possible. Thank you very much. Again, like I said, this is an evolving project. When we submitted the abstract for this, I was hoping we would say, and here are the evidence-based policy interventions. And knowing now that that was a lofty goal that someday we will reach, but not today. So thank you very much for your attention and any feedback or questions. And thank you again for attending. I know we do have a few minutes. Evening, but thank you for attending. And if you have any questions, we can open the floor to any of those. And then if you want to contact any of the presenters following the presentation, please don't hesitate to email me, and I'm happy to triage as necessary. But they don't. You have to pay for them. Yeah, so if anybody wants the slides, I know a couple folks have given me their business cards, so we can do that, and then we'll also put them on our website. So you can look at www.asto.org/healthyaging, or if you give me your business card, I can just send it to you directly.
So. Mm-hmm. We can ask questions?
Yes, yeah.
But I know, back in the 90s, my postdoc was in psychosocial epidemiology, and it was about successful aging. And that really, I think, for a lot of people, connoted like, sort of living disease-free. I mean, there was nothing wrong with you.
Right.
Right. And that's nice, but it's not, I think, it actually is not a term that captures the adult population, even the middle-aged population, when you consider the prevalence of like, chronic conditions that people have. And it almost sort of makes you wonder, well, what about everybody else? So, I mean, so the capacity to reach your fullest potential for your physical, emotional, social, spiritual well-being actually is something that everybody ought to be able to have the opportunity for. Positive aging, I haven't read the background on, but that almost sounds to me more as if it's trying to push that framework away from that deficit model around, you know, it's aging is a disease.
It is. I asked her after the presentation, she distinguished successful and positive, that successful is just physical and positive
right.
was more encompassing.
Mm-hmm. that's really based on a World Health Organization framework. So, and then I was mentioning to somebody at the beginning of the session, my presentations are never really done because every time I read something that's not just an anecdote or an urban legend, I think about how it fits. So for people who are members of the American Society of Aging, I already hear that some people have already gotten their Journal of Generations, which is focusing on ageism. Has anybody here gotten that or seen that? So, I just got an email about it on Saturday or Sunday, so I haven't had a chance to read it all yet, but I think it's really, there's a lot there that's also going to be helpful for framing this and pushing forward, because it talks about sort of where we are societally, in a way, in our mindset about age, but it also pushes on a lot of the issues around aging that and policies that we just don't talk about enough. So. Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just like to have a discussion. It doesn't really
right.
have to be a discussion. Because I like how Hawaii also got the NAACD grant and did on a conference call. So I thought Oregon did a very good job. But I like I forget the word you used, but the focus or the attention to something. You don't really need to start another program. You just right. have to get the attention. We get so distracted, we get so many things going on, and we have the system, so how do we just keep using our well-built system to keep many threads going forward?
So I was curious how other people might answer your question. Anybody?
Yeah.
Although, I know somebody had a hand up back there, too, but I thought... Oh, you're stretching? Okay, that's good.
Well, one thing I would say as a gerontologist is that we forgot to emphasize to our youth that it's really important to stay healthy throughout your whole lifespan, and you won't have all of these aging problems.
Right.
You will just be living a successful lifespan. We framed it so, and people don't value health for some reason. I mean, it's hard among us, but when I ask people when they do things or where they are, that they just seem very distracted about their own health, that it isn't a high value. And I would like to see us flip that way early, especially with kids, that health is one of our most important things.
I think that's why it's also important for images of older people doing things, not to just be cute or funny, but to be part of normal life. And in some of my presentations, I show a slide of people out riding a bike, kids all riding bikes, and they all have helmets on. And then there's this, I don't know if anybody's ever seen it, an older woman, white-haired, out in front of them all riding, and she doesn't have on a helmet. So, so I use a slide like that to also talk about, are we thinking about chronic traumatic encephalopathy or just head injuries, and the policies or just health promotion for that as well, as opposed to using a slide like that to just say, I guess it could be a slide for kids aren't as physically active as they need to be, and look, they're not going to be able to ride as fast. But we have so much to do with our imagery and the way we just start to think about things. And this week we're talking about isms, if people get that far in their conversation, and I don't know how many times age has come up among the isms in the discussions this week. But anyway, there are a lot of people that know a lot here.
Anybody have any